sides into the sea. It has not soil enough to grow a single blade of grass. On crossing the imaginary line drawn from Punta Mala to Azuera, the ships from Europe bound to Sulaco lose at once the strong breezes of the ocean. They become the prey of capricious airs that play with them for 30 hours at a stretch sometimes. Before them, the head of the calm gulf is filled on most days of the year by a great body of motionless and opaque clouds. On the rare clear mornings, another shadow is cast upon the sweep of the gulf. The dawn breaks high behind the towering and serrated wall of the Cordillera, a clear-cut vision of dark peaks rearing their steep slopes on a lofty pedestal of forest rising from the very edge of the shore. Amongst them, the white head of Iguarota rises majestically upon the blue. Three uninhabited islets basking in the sunshine opposite the entrance to the harbor of Sulaco bear the name of the Isabels. There is the Great Isabel, the Little Isabel, and Hermosa, which is the smallest. The Great Isabel has a spring of fresh water issuing from the overgrown side of a ravine. Resembling an emerald green wedge of land a mile long and laid flat upon the sea, it bears two forest trees standing close together with a wide spread of shade at the foot of their smooth trunks. A ravine extending the whole length of the island is full of bushes, and presenting a deep tangled cleft on the high side, spreads itself out on the other into a shallow depression abutting on a small strip of sandy shore. From that low end of the Great Isabel, the eye plunges through an opening 2 miles away, as abrupt as if chopped with an axe out of the regular sweep of the coast, right into the harbor of Sulaco. The only sign of commercial activity within the harbor, visible from the beach of the Great Isabel, is the square blunt end of the wooden jetty which the Oceanic Steam Navigation Company, the OSN of familiar speech, had thrown over the shallow part of the bay soon after they had resolved to make of Sulaco one of their ports of call for the Republic of Costaguana. The state possesses several harbors on its long seaboard, but except Qatar, an important place, all are either small and inconvenient inlets in an iron-bound coast, like Esmeralda, for instance, 60 miles to the south, or else mere open roadsteads exposed to the winds and fretted by the surf. Perhaps the very atmospheric conditions which had kept away the merchant fleets of bygone ages induced the OSN Company to violate the sanctuary of peace sheltering the calm existence of Sulaco. The variable airs sporting lightly with the vast semicircle of waters within the head of Azuera could not baffle the steam power of their excellent fleet. Year after year, the black hulls of their ships had gone up and down the coast, in and out, past Azuera, past the Isabels, past Punta Mala, disregarding everything but the tyranny of time. As they seldom failed to account for the smallest package, rarely lost a bullock, and had never drowned a single passenger, the name of the OSN stood very high for trustworthiness. The OSN superintendent in Sulaco for the whole Costaguana section of the service was very proud of his company's standing. Captain Joseph Mitchell prided himself on his profound knowledge of men and things in the country. Amongst these last, he accounted as most unfavorable to the orderly working of his company the frequent changes of government brought about by revolutions of the military type. The political atmosphere of the Republic was generally stormy in these days. The fugitive patriots of the defeated party had the knack of turning up again on the coast with half a steamer's load of small arms and ammunition. Such resourcefulness Captain Mitchell considered as perfectly wonderful in view of their utter destitution at the time of their flight. And he could speak with knowledge, for on a memorable occasion he had been called upon to save the life of a dictator belonging to an overturned government, together with the lives of a few Sulaco officials. For Senor Ribiera, such was the dictator's name, had come pelting 80 miles over mountain tracks after the lost battle of Socorro, in the hope of outdistancing the fatal news, which of course he could not manage to do on a lame mule. The animal, moreover, expired under him at the end of the Alameda, where the military band plays sometimes in the evenings between the revolutions. "Sir," Captain Mitchell would pursue with portentous gravity, "the ill-timed end of that mule attracted attention to the unfortunate